Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and we have got, I think, a subject that is a very provocative one, emotional eating. And my guest today, Dr. Jennifer Tate, is a woman that has been dealing with this for quite a bit of time. And so often when we hear the terms emotional eating, we automatically have these pictures in our head of a very gluttonous, undisciplined type of person. But I think you're going to find, after we chat with Dr. Jennifer Tate, that there may be some misconceptions there, and there's a lot more going on behind this habit that really sabotages and undermines the lives of many, many people, men as well as women. Dr. Jennifer Tate, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be on the show.
Now, do you mind if I just call you Jennifer?
Sure, that's fine.
Wonderful. Jennifer, you're a licensed clinical psychologist, and you're a director of the Dialectical Behavior Therapy Program at the American Institute for Cognitive Therapy in New York, which is where you are today. And you travel back and forth between the West Coast and the East Coast. I would like to ask you a question. What was it that made you decide that you really needed to communicate some information regarding emotional eating? Was there anything in your own personal experience that made you aware that this was something that needed to be talked about in a more open format without condemnation and judgment?
You know, one of the things that I've noticed is one of my values, one of the reasons I chose to pursue a career in clinical psychology, is I really want to help people that feel hopeless. And a lot of people think, oh, you know, doesn't that sound nice? But this is more than just sounding nice. There's actual researched methods that work for people. And it was astounding to me that I was seeing patients who've been struggling with their weight for, you know, 40 or 50 years, depending on their age, and felt like this was like the one thing in their life they could not manage and could not control. And there is a science out there to managing your emotions, and this is kind of the missing link. A lot of books talk about what to eat and when, but they don't address that a lot of eating is influenced by emotions. So I realized that I just had to introduce the public to the secrets behind how to ultimately change your relationship with your food and also change your relationship with yourself.
This book is not a diet book. That was emphasized very strongly in the introduction. And we've got a plethora of diet books. And I know people...
Seems like we have... more diet books we have, the more weight people seem to gain.
Yes. It's really quite interesting. Now, food is something we have to have. Food is something that, in Italian tradition, which is part of my background, it's something that you do, it's something that you share with people, there's good conversation, it's meant to be savored, enjoyed. The French have a wonderful attitude about it also. In America, it's almost gotten to a point where you're not really supposed to enjoy food.
Mm.
And I think that's a sad statement.
Yeah.
It's like deprivation is better than enjoyment.
Yeah, and you know, this is a great point because a lot of people, these diet books really promote a very rigid lifestyle, and the more you kind of restrict your food intake, the more likely you are to actually binge and overeat. So there's something special about learning to really be able to taste your food and also not make eating the only source of joy and pleasure in your life.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about DBT. What is it?
DBT is basically a really well-researched method of treating people who struggle. So many people struggle with feeling like their emotions take charge of their lives and they can't seem to manage their emotions. So DBT is a specific treatment that really teaches people how to regulate their emotions. So emotions, you know, a lot of people feel like emotions are controlling their behaviors, but this is kind of about how to accept your emotions and live a life that really matters to you. And learn how, you know, to be in the present moment, be effective in relationships, cope with difficult emotions, and live according to your values.
I remember a study that was done, oh, so many years ago. They took a group of children, and they did an experiment, because so often there is this admonition. In fact, they've started doing something in the state of Washington, which I think is totally disgusting. They're only going to have certain portions of food in the cafeterias or wherever it is that the children get their food on a daily basis. And I thought this is very interesting, and it's somebody's idea that if we restrict certain, if we just say you can only have so much, then it's going to counteract what's considered the epidemic, which is a popular paradigm that's being enforced, of obesity among children. But this study that went on, they let kids, they put up buffet tables, and they had candy, they had fruit, they had everything and anything you could possibly want. Well, they observed kids. They didn't tell them what they could eat and what they couldn't eat. And what was fascinating is that the kids first went to the candy. Oh my goodness, this is just great. They could have as much of it as they wanted. Well, within a very short period of time, nobody was eating at the candy table. Nobody wanted it. They were going to other tables with healthier foods, and they observed the kids. And they said it was wonderful because it let them know that the children really seemed to be paying attention to what they were putting into their bodies. And when they had choice, and you didn't make judgments about anything, you just watched them or just let them do it, they stopped wanting the candy, absolutely. It was just a fascinating study, and it intrigued the adults that were doing it. Well, and so I find this quite interesting. Do you think this sometimes carries over into adulthood?
Well, Donna, this is such a wonderful question, and actually this actually reminds me of a couple other studies that I'll briefly talk about. You know, there's a study that finds that if you let people, you know, they're told that they're going to do a taste test of delicious foods, if they're on a diet, they are much more likely to overeat. And I think this is totally true. When you're on a diet and you're told everything is forbidden, it leads you to kind of rebel and want to indulge more. And also, you know, another study is that children were told that they could, this is something I actually talk about in my book, and this is kind of the philosophy of the book, that children were told, you know, if you eat this marshmallow that I'm giving to you now, you'll only have one marshmallow. If you can wait 15 minutes until I come back, you'll have two marshmallows. The most fabulous thing about this study, this is actually one of the most famous psychological studies, you know, that's known today, is that children that were able to wait the 15 minutes until the experimenter came back actually did better on the SATs, you know, years later, actually had more lasting friendships, less behavioral problems. There is more to waiting and having some sort of wisdom around food than just having a, you know, great body. But it's actually, you know, learning how to build this muscle of managing your emotions, choosing what you want your life to stand for, and in the service of higher goals, you know, correlates with just living a better life. And this is something that we all need to work on.
It is amazing to me when people first started really acknowledging that there were individuals that were having really serious food problems. And of course, I think all of us can say, gee, I know someone that weighs 350 pounds, 400 pounds, what's the matter with them? If they just go on a diet, that would be, they'd be able to take care of everything. That would be, to change their life entirely. But the thing is, if you can't change what's in your head, if your image is that you are fat and overweight, then you have that in your head, and it's almost like a subconscious programming. And even if you became as slender as a pencil, or skinny as a pencil, that's what I should say. If you became that thin, you still see yourself as fat. And this is something that's really been brought out to the forefront with people that have bulimia or anorexia. And the feeling, there's so much that goes into this. Do women have more of a challenge with anorexia and bulimia than men? And if so, can you say what specifics, if there are any, that relate to this?
Absolutely. And Donna, you know, you're also just reminding me that one of the things that we have to address is so many people. This is one of the things I really talk about in my book, End Emotional Eating, that a lot of people of normal weights, shapes, and sizes are preoccupied and disturbed by their body and their appearance, even if they're healthy weights. And this is because I think we've come to this in our society. People have really talked about people and described people according to their outsides rather than their insides. And this book is really kind of about getting in touch with the other things inside you that matter. Mm-hmm. And I think what happens is a lot of people socially, or, you know, in the media, there's countless things we could say about that. There was just an instance last week that a lot of people in the eating disorder community were quite disappointed with Barney's, the upscale boutique, for slenderizing Minnie Mouse and other Disney characters for an ad campaign. I think there's tremendous pressure for people to look a certain way that comes at the expense of really caring about other virtues that people possess.
Mm-hmm. Carl Rogers, you have one of Carl's quotes. The curious paradox is that when I accept myself just as I am, then I can change. I think that, again, the subconscious part of ourselves is quite interesting. I remember, because when I was growing up, I was constantly on a diet. My mother put me on one all the time. Mm-hmm. We lived in Southern California, and that was just a part of life. And I'll never forget, I was in my late 20s. And there was a gentleman that ran a beauty spa in an area of Lancaster, California. His name was Gene. And Gene said to me, and I was on one of these diets where you really had to be very, very rigid, very strict, very disciplined. And I did it.
And those kinds of diets is what really actually causes the suffering.
Right. And what happened is that he mentioned something to me, and it really stuck with me in a very curious way. He said, oh my goodness, you have dropped, because his business was the business of helping women get thin. That's what he did. And he was a very thin man himself. So he said to me, boy, you have dropped, I think it was like 15 pounds. And I'm tiny, so on my frame, 15 pounds is like 30 on somebody else. And so it had really been a very intense basic starvation program. His comment to me was, wow, you have dropped weight. You look fabulous. You must really feel good about yourself and see yourself differently when you have your clothes off. And I remember him saying that, and I thought, I've never thought of that. And I can remember looking in the mirror and looking at myself and saying, no, I'm not. I don't see myself differently, and it was a big aha for me because it made me realize that I was defining things by the size I was. I was not acceptable unless I was extremely thin.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is I have a very strong physical structure. I'm never, ever going to be a 100-pound. I can't tell you how many people that were close to me said, well, you should be 105 pounds. I said, you're out of your mind. It doesn't work that way. I'm not built that way. I'm not structured that way. That's not my body. So it is a fascinating thing, and I share this because I'm sure that there are people listening to this show today that maybe have gone through certain things, but what stuck with me so vividly, and I shared this with a lot of people, is that when I looked in that mirror, I did not see a slender young woman. I didn't see that because I had stuff in my head. I wasn't thin enough. So I share that because I think that's so important.
This is a huge issue because what happens is that if we're not eating enough, We can't think clearly. And to begin with, we can't even see ourselves clearly. We're not very objective in the way we see ourselves. A lot of how we perceive ourselves has to do with our thoughts and feelings, which are often based in kind of what I call emotion mind rather than in reality. Plus, adding nutritional deprivation to the equation, you really can't think clearly. And so this gets really tough to treat if people don't catch this early, though there are, you know, real answers, because people start losing contact with actually the clear wisdom that comes from healthy eating and a balanced perspective to life. And this book is also for people that we all face emotions constantly throughout the day, and it's become very acceptable for people to use food as a way to cope. Mm-hmm. There are so many other ways to cope with difficult emotions beyond food.
Oh, I agree. And I think one of the best is, I think meditation is one of the best ways, and also doing something physical, something where you don't employ your mind in any kind of intellectual noise. It could be scrubbing a floor like a girlfriend of mine used to do, or it could be taking a walk, but it's making a shift. There has to be decisiveness. Let's talk about acceptance of where we are in the moment, realizing this is it, this is what we are right here, right now, being attentive to ourselves. You bring up breathing. Mm-hmm. Why and how has this proven to be valuable with people?
Breathing is so helpful. And one of the things I love breathing, and this is something that Jon Kabat-Zinn, one of the leading mindfulness teachers, mindfulness is a fancy word for saying learning to be in the present moment, told me that breathing is just a helpful reminder. As long as you are breathing, there is more right with you than wrong with you. If you can find your breath, you can access this wisdom. There is more right with you than wrong with you. All you have to do is breathe. You know, breathing reminds you of this. And finding your breath is just kind of a way to slow down. It's a space between an urge and an action. And there's certain ways that if you really bring your full attention to your breathing, that actually changes your brain. You can enlarge the size of the middle prefrontal cortex in your brain that actually helps you make decisions along with long-term goals. Some of the things I like about the breath is always there. It's like a friend in a crowd. You can always find your breath. Your breath helps you slow down to realize you have so many options and that there is more right with you than wrong with you. A lot of times we breathe in kind of a short way that feeds our anxiety, and if you really slow down and expand the breath, you can really expand your awareness and find other options.
You make a comment about how everyone's body has its own reasons for maintaining whatever weight and shape we have within certain parameters. And you talk about a woman named Anne, and she was one of these people. She was on a stair climber. She was so good about exercise. She was doing everything. But she had challenges, and she did an exercise called mirror exposure. What was that?
You know, mirror exposure, and I really appreciate the detail that you've gotten into. It's so wonderful with all that you do to have spent the time, and so many people have told me that when they read the book that it just, there's so much information in there that provides so much use. So mirror exposure is basically a lot of times when we don't like something about ourselves, we really obsess about it. We just kind of notice a specific part and just focus on that part that we don't like. Some people might focus on their bellies or their sides or parts of their thighs, and really just preoccupy themselves with just looking at this part of your body in a certain negative way. And mirror exposure is a method that you do with a therapist who's trained in cognitive behavioral therapy, which is a scientific way to deal with body image issues. So mirror exposure, basically you stand with a therapist and a patient looks. I have a mirror in my office that's a full size, and people look in the mirror and they have to describe from their head to their toes what they see in the mirror, just the facts. And what happens is just moving away from judgments to facts helps you kind of gain the objectivity or the clarity that's not colored by our emotions. And the combination of looking in the mirror plus also describing more than just the perceived problematic part, but expanding your awareness can really free you up. And a lot of people, I know this is kind of hard to understand without being able to see it, but a lot of patients that have struggled for years, for their whole lives, with not liking the way they look, doing this exercise provides tremendous freedom and relief.
One of the sections in your book is mindful moments.
Mm-hmm.
And you've addressed a little bit of it already. And mindfulness, as you said earlier, is paying attention to where we are in the moment, because that's really what we're able to live right here and right now. It's what we're doing, just like this interview. We have to be mindful about being involved in our conversation and focusing on that. You talk about it's not a good idea if you get a piece of cake, focusing, you know, you're out, you're having a great time, you're going to have some dessert, but you're focusing on, my God, I've got 500,000 calories in this piece of cake. I'm just da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And yet, instead of appreciating maybe the magnificent flavor of that cake, or whatever it might be, really paying attention to the flavors and how much pleasure you're getting from it, you're getting distracted. And when I was telling people you were going to come on the show, I said, have you ever been in a situation where your emotions have just, you've been highly stressed, maybe there's a plate of brownies in front of you, and all of a sudden the next time you look at the plate, the brownies are all gone. What happened? You ate them. And you're not even aware that you know you were eating them, but they're gone. The same thing with candy or peanuts or bread, a steak. It doesn't make any difference what it is. Let's chat about that for a moment, being mindful.
Being mindful means living your life with your eyes open. And what I like about this is it changes your relationship with eating, but it also just changes your life totally. I mean, so often you're in the store, you're picking up groceries, and you don't even remember, you know, why you stopped in the store or, you know, some of the things that you meant to buy. You're just totally preoccupied with things that happened earlier in the day that made you stressed or things you're worried about happening later in the day. And basically, a lot of our sense of fullness in terms of the eating has to do with our remembering. So you can eat a lot of food with a little attention, or enough food with a lot of awareness. And awareness really provides a sense of satiety or experience of fullness. You know, there's a great, great researcher at Cornell who talks about, he gave people buckets of stale popcorn while they were going into the movie theater. Now, if I asked you if you could taste stale popcorn, you would probably say yes. If I asked you if you would eat a whole tub of stale popcorn, you would say absolutely not. What happens? People go to the movie theater, have a tub of stale popcorn. Then they're asked, it's given to them for free, and then they're asked in exchange for the free popcorn to answer a couple of questions about how the popcorn was. No one even noticed it was stale. You're watching a movie. You're not paying attention to what you're eating. And these are smart people. I mean, this is not people that have never tasted popcorn. I mean, these are frequent moviegoers. We can only imagine they know what good popcorn is, but we just don't know. And this is exactly what you're saying. If you're paying attention to your emotion, or you're paying attention to thoughts in your head about things that are distressing to you, or even just other things you have to do, you cannot enjoy what you're eating. And a big part of our ability to regulate our eating has to do with us paying attention.
I think sometimes there is so much of the elimination of the joy of food.
Mm.
I really think that the Italians and the French have a very good attitude about it, because they want food to taste good, and they want you to be able to savor the flavors. Any good chef wants that. They want you to be able to notice the subtleties of whatever might be there. And so often, I think we forget to do that. In fact, I think that it's very easy for us to acknowledge that we may, because of stress or activities, we may not be paying attention to our bodies, and sometimes just maybe being at a buffet line. I don't like buffets because there's so much food that I'm not even interested in eating. But a buffet is a good example to use. What is it that really attracts you? What is it that you really want? And I have found sometimes my taste buds have not wanted certain things. And by golly, I don't want it. I'm just not interested. And it's a phenomena that I think if people were in a position to be able to pay attention to that, they might find that, one, food would be far more enjoyed, and two, they would be eating what's right for their body. How do you feel about that?
I agree with you, and I mean, I think another thing that we have to pay attention to is also, am I hungry? There is food everywhere, and we confuse its availability with us, with our appetite. We're not necessarily hungry because there's food around. You might be at a buffet, and there, just because there are tons of options doesn't mean that you necessarily, I think a lot of us maintain this sense of like anxiety. I have to eat now because I'm not sure when the next time I'll be able to eat is. Mm-hmm. But in our age, we're really blessed that food is always available to us for the most part. And if we don't eat now, we can find something to eat later. And just because there is a banquet hall full of food does not mean we are physically hungry.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a very good point. There is that side. I know that there are members of my family that have gone through extreme deprivation where they had no food. No food was available to them. They couldn't afford to pick it up, and so consequently, they went through a cycle where literally anything that was put in front of them after they went through this period of severe deprivation, they inhaled it. They didn't even taste what they were eating. If it was put in front of them, it was gone. So they ended up having a weight challenge. And subconsciously, that was there. And I think that that is where hoarding comes in, or the fear. You've described a fear. And some of it, I think, is a built-in mechanism of survival. It goes back centuries. I just think it's there. But there are some people that are never concerned. We've noticed it with dogs, and that may sound a little strange comparing dogs with people, but we have had Scottish Terriers through the years, and we've adopted many of them. Those that were deprived of food, those that had not been allowed to have but just a tiny amount, always were voraciously hungry. They would just go after food like crazy. The Scotties that we had that were our babies from the beginning and always had food, never were deprived, those dogs never got anxious about the food because they knew it was going to be there for them. And I think human beings, we're animals too. Mm-hmm. I think that there is that reaction patterning that sometimes is subliminally very difficult to get rid of, especially if you've gone through really tough, tough times.
And that is also one of the ways in which mindfulness and your breath are useful, because being in the moment, you know, just being in the now and paying attention to how you feel right now rather than worrying about the future. If the future reasonably, you know, in your inner wisdom is not something you need to worry about in terms of finding food later, can provide tremendous relief.
Mm-hmm. You have some wonderful comments in here that called urge surfing, step by step. You have many different segments in your book that I think bring options of understanding to people that are willing to explore this side of themselves so that they can be more involved with life on a different level and not have to be so anxious about emotional eating. And I think that it's something that just about everybody has had to deal with at one time or another. But those that really are challenged by this, those that really are feeling very challenged by this, I think your book, End Emotional Eating, is very insightful. Now, Jennifer, I know we're just about out of time here. People can go to your website, Dr. Jenny, and her, Jennifer is J-E-N-N-I-F-E-R, and her last name is spelled TAITZ.com.
It's just drjennytates.com.
Jennytates.com. Oh, excuse me.
Yeah, and the book is also available on Amazon.
Yes. Now, in the minute that we have left before we end our delightful conversation here, what thought would you like to leave with my audience?
I just want the audience, and, you know, this is a question I'm asked a lot, to leave with this idea that there is more right with them than wrong with them. It really breaks my heart when people really define themselves by their problems, and you are more than your problems. You you have a lot to offer, and so many people feel really hopeless, and there is hope out there. And one of the things I love is I love hearing from readers who have read the book and found it meaningful. If you've read the book and you have any questions or would like to reach out to me, I would be honored to hear from you. You can reach me through my website.
That is wonderful. Dr. Jenny Teitz is the lady who has spent time with us in emotional eating. And I think you would find the information quite fascinating. And, you know, if you know of a young teenage girl, girls especially are hit hard because we have so much stuff that's absolutely thrown at us from every direction. It's so important for young girls to know that they are unique, that they have talents, and that they are beautiful in their own way. Being healthy is important, and understanding that food is not an enemy. You can live a very good life, a very healthy life, and have a healthy image of yourself. And emotional eating, I think, goes a long way towards doing that. So it'd be a good thing to share with someone that has young girls, and maybe you have some young girls yourself. Maybe they're your own children. I think having a good self-image is an important thing. Jenny, I want to thank you for being my guest today. Thank you so much. Go to drjennytate.com and find out more. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hello and welcome back. Donna Sebo here. Telephone lines are open. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. All I need from you is your first name or your initial, and I'll be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Awaken to Love, Gifts from Spirit. For those of you in Washington State, an incredible event is happening on September 15th at the Roosevelt Hotel in Seattle. This is a fundraiser for the Ascension Foundation's healing and educational programs. You'll be able to experience messages from loved ones, hear melodic sounds played on crystal bowls, and watch internationally renowned Upwork medium Michael Chane demonstrate his amazing skills of materializing objects. This and much more, including a silent auction and wine tasting. You'll be able to enjoy all of this. Guest speaker, Dr. Pat Buscelli. Tickets are $75 per person to pre-register, or for more details, contact 800-508-6437, 800-508-6437, or email info at michaelshane.com. Be sure to check out his website. It's a one-of-a-kind event you're not going to want to miss. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. Donna Sebo here, 888-627-6008, and I will be delighted to chat with you. Our guest tomorrow is going to be Daniel Mendez. Now, Daniel lives in Juarez, Mexico. We're going to be talking about his book, Equilibrium. Now, this is Daniel's spiritual journey. It's his story about how, as a businessman, he found a way to balance and harmonize his life in an environment that's chaotic with a lot of distractions. So we're going to be talking with him tomorrow. And then on Friday, we're going to be discussing the healing power of coffee, Cal Ori. Cal is so much fun. This is a woman that just does research on all kinds of beneficial things. And coffee, believe it or not, if you are an avid Starbucks fan or you just love that Java, I'll tell you what, you're going to be hearing some good things about it. So I hope you can join us, and be sure you share the information with your friends. Oh, and by the way, my email newsletter, we were able to take care of the corruption that had occurred within a certain system, and so that went out yesterday. It's also, my newsletter is also up on the website, DelphiInternational.com. So you'll be able to get that there, and I've got some fun information and a personal story about an egg and cheesecake. I know, it's going to sound a little strange, but hey, that's what we do. We talk about those things in life that make a difference. I wanted to share with you a story that comes from Africa. And it's about an African python. Mm-hmm. There are legends in every part of the world about special guardians. Well, in Rikersveld, it's an area in South Africa, there has been a legend that has been around for a long, long time. And it's sort of reminiscent of the legend of Solomon's Mine, but this is about a cavern that supposedly is absolutely stuffed full with diamonds, just packed with it. And this has been something that people have wanted to find, but there is a bit of a challenge with this cavern. It is guarded by Rootslang. It's called the Great Snake of the Orange River. And it is described as being 40 feet long. They call it a serpent, and it has enormous gems in its eye sockets. Now, there are persons that have been of the understanding that they knew where it was and that guides knew where this was. And it's called the Wonder Hole or the Bottomless Pit. And there's only one person, it was an old-time prospector, who tried to explore this cavern. And he used a winch and a cable, and he got to a ledge that was way, 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 way down. He said there were tunnels that led off the ledge, and he said there's an extremely strong smell of sulfur. And he was frightened, understandably so, when thousands of bats ended up coming out of the cavern, and they bumped into it. So when he did it, he had a lantern that he was carrying, and I'm sure it was one of those old-fashioned ones, had a candle or something like that in it, and he dropped it, and he never, ever wanted to go back again because it was just such a terrifying experience. Well, through the generations, travelers have claimed to see the huge snake or serpent, Rootslang, and reports of it have appeared in South African newspapers, so the legend is kept alive and well. And again, repeatedly, the witnesses say that the length of the serpent is 40 feet long, and it tells of 3-foot-wide tracks that they see along the Orange River. Now, there are always those that want to challenge the myths. If there is a chance that someone is going to make the big discovery of the diamonds, they like to do it. And they say prospectors have followed these 3-mile-wide tracks, and eventually it disappears. The tracks go into the river. And the people that live in this area of Africa say that Rootslang is a spirit snake, and anyone who encounters it is overcome by a sense of evil. Now, the question is, in our logical minds, we say, to ourselves, I want to know, does a giant snake actually live in the Orange River country? If so, is it a python? Although nobody's ever known a python to get to be 40 feet long. However, there is a recorded python that got to be 32 feet long. This was really odd. I mean, that is a huge, huge snake. And pythons 25 feet long. They found more than one. And I say, if you ever see a 25-foot python, it will really definitely affect you for the rest of your life. But the natives in Africa say there is only one Groot slang. And to this day, to the best of my knowledge, maybe one of you listening out there can tell me differently, I don't think that this cavern has been mined. There's so many things that we don't know. There's so many things that we don't understand. So there are those guardians as they are perceived. And sometimes the myth is based more in fact than what we like to acknowledge. So I thought I would share that fun bit of information with you. Donna Siebel here. Give me a buzz, 888-627-6008. 888-627-6008. People make a difference. How you think makes a difference. My guest today gave some suggestions regarding emotional eating. Well, there's a lot of things that can happen in life that we absolutely have no control over. And one of those is the weather. And there are so many people in the southern area of the United States that have been just hit over and over and over again. The Midwestern area of the country, we have just really had some incredible weather fronts that no one has any control over. There was a gentleman by the name of Bob Templeton who visited a city called Barrie in Ontario, Canada, and there had been a real severe weather situation. The year, I don't know, but a tornado had hit the town, killed a lot of people, did phenomenal damage. I mean, just absolutely millions and millions and millions of dollars worth of damage. And Bob Templeton was vice president of telemedia communications at the time, and he called a meeting of his entire staff and asked the question, how would you like to raise $3 million 3 days from now in just 3 hours and give the money to the people of Barrie, Ontario? Can you imagine what the response was to it? How would you like to raise $3 million 3 days from now in just 3 hours and give the money to the people of Barrie? The response was, from the group, when the question was asked, there's no way we can do that. First thing out of their mouth, it is not possible. $3 million, 3 hours, make it readily available to the people of Barrie. Not possible. Well, Bob Templeton had a different attitude. He had a flip chart. And what he did, he drew a huge T on the blank page of that flip chart. And on one side of the T, he wrote, why we can't. And on the other side, he wrote, how we can. Well, that changed everyone's mindset. The group began to brainstorm. And it didn't take all that much time when How We Can side had a lot of innovative ideas. The Why We Can't side didn't have that much there. When they went through all of the different ideas, and there was no criticism of one being a better idea than the other, once they put all the ideas down, then they decided on the primary action that they were going to take. And they decided to do a national radio show featuring well-known broadcasters. They got in touch with the broadcasters. Every single person that they contacted said, we'll be happy to do it. No charge. These people need help. They need it now. Stations were contacted. They agreed to broadcast the radiothon. Within 3 days, 50 stations across Canada participated, and $3 million was donated by the people listening. And the key to this, I think, more than anything else, is let's focus on how we can get things done. All of us have our challenges. Maybe it's overeating. Maybe it's something else. If we can focus on what it is we can do, and I think if we can sit down and brainstorm with people, people that can assist us in reaching the objectives we want, the impossible becomes possible. But we must be willing to ask, and we must be willing to be open. I think one of the most difficult things to learn is that when you open up yourself to others saying, I need some brainstorming here. I want to know how I can do this. I'm absolutely brain dead when it comes to the possibilities. Do you have any ideas? And let other people help you. That's one of the things that has happened over and over and over again in the United States. I think of the people in Tennessee who were hit, I mean horribly hit, by miserable weather a couple of years ago. And I recall seeing all the photos, and I just went, how are these people coping? Do you know what? They sent out a message because mainstream media basically ignored them. They said, we're going to be able to take care of this ourselves, and they did. And the people of Tennessee gathered together, worked together, volunteers. If someone didn't have money, they were out there helping in whatever way they could. They resolved. They were able to take care of it. See, it's people helping people. It makes a difference. But I will say this, if you don't ask, you don't get. You need to put the question out there, and you need to put it in front of people that will be happy to share ideas and concepts. You may not use everything they give you. If you don't ask, you don't get. And Bob Templeton did an incredible job with this situation in Canada, and what his executives had said was impossible, they themselves demonstrated it was possible. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break for just a moment. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. We'll be right back.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com. That's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N. And find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. I want to share a recipe with you that I find is just delightful. It's a German apple pancake, but I did something different with the recipe. And my first German apple pancake, oh my goodness, there was this restaurant in Los Angeles that I used to go to. And when you'd walk, people would stand in line. It'd be two blocks just to get into this place. They'd be back. I mean, the food was just so incredible. And their specialty was a German apple pancake. Now, when it was brought out to you, it actually had It took a half hour for them to cook it, but they would fix it in a pan, and then it would be flipped over, and then it would be caramelized under the broiler right on the plate that you were served. And it was a full-size dinner plate. That was what you got. I mean, it was a work of art as far as I was concerned, and, oh, the flavor was just heavenly. But I've always enjoyed German pancakes. They're very special, and especially when its temperatures start getting cooler, I think it makes for a great Sunday breakfast. It's one of our favorites in the Siebel house. But we did something different. I did something different, I should say, with this recipe. And it's an easy one to fix, but what I did, instead of using apples, I used some Asian pears that were gifted to me by one of our neighbors that has this Asian pear tree, and they had all of this fruit. They gave it to my husband, and they said, okay, here, take this to Donna. Well, when I ate the Asian pears, they didn't have very much flavor to me, and they didn't have a lot of sweetness. But I thought, you know what, I'm going to try it in the German apple pancake recipe. I did. And I'll tell you the different things that I adjusted, and the flavor was absolutely phenomenal. Those Asian pears, when I would eat them raw, didn't have the flavor that they had. It released the pancake, cooking the pancake, released the wonderful, delicate flavors of the Asian pears. So let me share this with you because it's really great. You're going to need 3 whole eggs. And by the way, all ingredients should be at room temperature. They should be at room temperature. What you're going to need are 3 whole eggs. You're going to need an additional 3 eggs, and you want to separate the yolks from the white. You're going to need 1/2 cup plus 2 tablespoons of sugar, 1 tablespoon of vanilla, 2 1/4 cups of whole milk. I prefer using evaporated milk or heavy cream. It gives a different consistency to the batter, but it's your choice. And then you're going to need 4 cups of flour, and you're going to need 7 Granny Smith or Pippin apples. And, of course, you want to peel them and core them. I don't peel my fruit. I just leave the peeling on because it adds color and that type of thing. But that's my bias. And then 7 tablespoons of butter. And you can have some cinnamon sugar, some sour cream jam, or marmalade on the side if you want to add that to this German pancake. And this is how simple it is. You take your whole eggs, your egg yolk, your sugar, your vanilla, and your milk, and you blend them. You can use a blender, you can use a mixer, whatever. You want to thoroughly blend it. Then you want to stir in your flour, and you want to make sure there's no lumps in the flour. I like using a mixer. It's just much more efficient for me than just trying to whisk it. And then you want your batter. This is your batter. You want to just set it off to the side and let it stand. And then you're going to take the 3 egg whites, put them in a separate bowl, and you whip them until they're real stiff, and then you're going to fold it into your batter. Your apples, you cut into 1/2-inch slices and sauté in a tablespoon of butter. You want this done in a heavy steel, stainless steel skillet or a cast iron skillet. And you want them until both sides of the apple are lightly browned because you turn them frequently. And then you're going to add 1 cup of batter, cover with a lid, and cook until golden brown underneath, and you flip it over, and then it's going to be set. So this is a style of German apple pancake, and you sprinkle it with cinnamon sugar if you like, and you can put it under the broiler to brown, and you can then, you know, take the pancake out of the skillet, put it on the serving plate, and have those little items on the side. Now, this makes about 7 pancakes. Well, I'm lazier. This is what I like to do, and this is another version of the German pancake. But for this recipe, you can take pears. You can take Asian pears. You can slice them thinly. You can remove the skin if you want. Of course, you're going to core it. Slice it thinly. And instead of vanilla, use your almond flavoring, and then have some sliced almonds. And scatter that just lightly over your pancake as you are putting the first one down and as it's browning on the first side. Just sprinkle some of the almonds and then flip it over. It is just going to be absolutely wonderful. The flavors are incredible, And the pears with the almond flavoring give a whole different taste for your taste bud. It really, really is good. Now, this is one version of German apple pancake, and at another time I'll share you my favorite version. Because I'm lazy, I like to have everything in one pot, stick it in the oven, and let it bake. So I have a version for that as well, and I'll be sharing that with you. And for those of you that are getting the newsletter, if you aren't getting it, you can go to my website, Delphi International, and get it. I'm going to also be sharing with you the magnificent cheesecake recipe, either tomorrow or the next day, that I use that is so easy, so wonderful, and so delicious. You don't need to buy the store-bought stuff where you get the prepackaged mix. This is wonderfully, wonderfully delicious. So I'll be sharing those recipes with you, too, possibly this week. This is Donna Seabold. I know we're just about out of time. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Don't look at food as an enemy. Look at it as one of the delights of life. And when you are looking at food and are involved in the preparation of it, bless it. Realize that it's giving nourishment for the body, but more than that, if you want to share it with someone, it's going to give you the opportunity of fellowship as well. And I think social interaction with food is absolutely a blessing beyond belief. This is a wonderful day of your life. Enjoy it to the fullest. And until next time, right here, same time, same place, well, we'll chat again. Donna Seabold here. Have a magnificent day. We'll be back tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Seabold Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Seabold Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.